winning their first flag since 1965.
This is Cyrus Sarna with the game, and Essendon the Premiers for 1985, winning two in a row.
Away goes Michael Long. Oh, what play! His man has been touched on the line.
Watson, who emerges with the football. Some icing on the cake. Oh, what a finish.
Hurd! The fairy tale's complete after a horror week. James Hurd, you are a genius.
And a warm welcome to the Essendon community, the Bomber faithful, to the latest edition of Working Through It. It's a bit of an Anzac Day flavour to this week's program, with Nathan Buckley, our special guest, and also Travis Old from the AFL will join us too. I'm Adam White, but let's get straight to the stars of the show, and we'll start with the CEO of the Essendon Football Club, Xavier Campbell. Xavier, welcome.
Pandemic, a couple of...
Now, I've got to ask you, what are you doing letting a Collingwood person on the Essendon website?
Well, we respect Bucks greatly, obviously, with the theme of Anzac Day this week. There's a bit to talk about. Obviously, there's a lot going on in the footy landscape at the moment, and Bucks has got a really respected opinion across AFL football. So I'm sure with he and Hurdy and Joe, we're going to get some really good insights from them today.
It's a tougher week because, obviously, it's meant to be the build-up to Anzac Day. It's the Anzac Day match. It's been so big for the football club for a long time. Is this a harder week for you as CEO, knowing what it should be or what it could have been?
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, they're all a little bit difficult at the moment. It's difficult for everyone at the moment with everything that everyone's going through. Obviously, it's something very special to be involved in. I think, you know, Job and Jim can talk about that a bit more, what it means to them in a second. But from a broader club perspective, like, it's such an honour to play in this game. I guess you sort of remove yourself from that and you look at more like the Anzac Day, the normal Anzac Day commemorative festival at the shrine and everything else. Like, that's what you sort of... It's sad that we're not going to be able to do that in the same sort of format that we normally would, because it's such a special moment. It's something that's very special that we're acknowledging in our history. So that's sort of more, I think, from my perspective, that's more disappointing than not being able to play football this week, I think.
All right, let's welcome in someone that knew how to play football on Anzac Day. There's no doubt about that, and that is James Hurd. Hurdy, welcome. It was obviously, it's a big day for Australia, but it was a big day for you with some of the performances you put out there on that day. Was it a different day for you?
Thanks, Whitey, and great to be here again. Anzac Day is an extremely special day for a number of reasons. In our family, having relatives and grandparents who've gone to war, and great uncle and sacrificed a lot of their life, and a lot of people around Australia sacrificing their life. But intimately for our immediate family, our daughter Stephanie was born on this day, or on the 25th of April, almost 21 years ago. So we're celebrating a 21st birthday in this house in lockdown. So if the noise is a bit loud around the area, I promise you it's only the six of us. But yeah, it's a very special day. And from a football point of view, it was a wonderful celebration to be able to be involved in the day, to celebrate our ex-servicemen and women. And just something very special to be a part of for both Collingwood and Essendon. And I'm really looking forward to talking to Bucks about not only that, but, you know, Essendon from a Collingwood perspective too, because, one of our greatest rivals, and obviously Carlton and Essendon won the most premierships, Collingwood just behind. And those three clubs have really, you know, been huge for the past 150 years of our existence.
Yeah, absolutely. And Nathan Buckley played footy against James Hurd from a young age, and obviously coached against each other as well. That's all to come a little bit later on. Job Watson rounds out our team. Job, I'm just going to leave it up to you to continue things on, and Bucks will be on in about 5 minutes from now.
Yeah, thanks, Whitey. It is exciting to be here, and obviously it's a different build-up to an Anzac Day that I suppose the Essendon and the Collingwood supporters are experiencing, and along with everyone else. And Hurdy, I guess you couldn't imagine as a 21-year-old where you'd rather be than spending your 21st birthday locked down with your family. I'm sure Steph's thrilled.
Oh, I'm trying to explain to Steph how good it's going to be for us all to get around each other and have a ball. She's been very good about it, but you just sense that there is... Well, she's actually come back... She's been in Paris studying for the past 6 months, and she was meant to be there for her 21st birthday. So, as you said, where else would you rather be than with your mum and dad tucked up in bed about 9:30?
Yeah. And Xavier, how's your week been? How's the an operations update for the supporters on what's transpired this week from the club's perspective?
Yeah, no, it's been a more challenging week. What are we, week five now of feels the lockdown? It feels like it's this week. I'd be lying if I didn't say I found this week more challenging than last week. I think it's sort of a lot of the time over the last sort of couple of weeks, you get out in the morning, you sort of see the opportunity, feel the opportunity in the day and where we're at, and trying to find, you know, a way to improve the club and the rebound and things like that. And this week's probably there's been a few more challenging days. I think, you know, I've spent a lot of time talking to the players this week, and about halfway through calling the playing list just to check in and see how the guys are doing. I think a lot of them probably feel similar. I think probably a lot of people listening could probably resonate with that. So it's sort of just trying to find ways to reinvigorate, you know, the hard part knowing, and you would know this better than anyone, but when you haven't got that visibility on when we're going to restart or how long this process is going to take, it can be challenging. And I think to recognise the peaks and troughs it's very real. So I think Monday, and we'll talk to Travis Auld from the AFL shortly, but knowing that Monday we're going to get a more definitive update from the AFL, it's much needed, and it'll be well received across the entire competition, I'm sure.
And Xavier, this time last week we talked about the independence of the club around the financial independence of the club from the AFL. A week on, are we any closer to knowing how long we'll be able to keep that independence for, or is it still just we're still in a bit of limbo as to how that's going to work?
Yeah, no, thanks. Jim, we had a board meeting on Tuesday. It was a big board meeting. It was a scheduled board meeting, but it was a big and it was an important board meeting. And a lot of that had to do with a lot of the modelling, and more updated modelling based on some insights from the AFL that we're working to. And they're due today to the AFL, and that will lead a lot of our thinking around our cash flows and what, you know, what period of time we've got to be able to manage from a cash flow perspective. So we were thinking July, August, and we'll be able to extend that now. We've got some support, some broader support, which is great. Doesn't mean we're still not going to have to make some big decisions around our cost management. And that's sort of the next phase now is, well, what does the football club of the future look like based on this new economy? It's probably a very similar discussion that all 18 clubs will be having now in the AFL, but we've got to right-size our business. We've got to reshape how we sit from an administrative perspective, where we can find efficiencies, and equally from a footy department perspective. And, you know, we might even be able to talk to Bucks a bit about the challenge and how they're approaching it at Collingwood as well. But it's very real, it's very important, and, you know, we'll start to, over the next couple of weeks, get greater visibility and more definitive position from the AFL around what we need to get to from a soft cap perspective, what restart looks like, the timelines around players coming back to training. And I think that will be much, you know, really well received by the players and really well received by the fans as well.
Xavier, with this trying to plan things out, you saw what happened with Cricket Australia, and they've come under some scrutiny about, you know, are they being too cautious? Are they projecting too far without really knowing, and the cost cutting that's going on there? How difficult is it to, I think that you'd always want to be too early rather than too late, but when does it get to a point where you think, like, there's too much speculation going on here, and it's not really prudent to be making such drastic cuts in a landscape that we really don't know yet?
Yeah, and that's the thing. We're sort of in a state of flux, and as much as we're preparing for all the different scenarios, you know, you prepare for the worst and you hope for the best. And I think that's exactly what's being done with the AFL modelling right now. But what's not being, what decisions aren't being made is that we're not actually executing on any particular scenario right now. We're in a state of flux where obviously a significant portion of our staff have been stood down across all 18 clubs. The JobKeeper has certainly helped in being able to help staff through that period. You're right, we won't know until we sort of see, is it going to be a season with 17 games and some crowds, is it just 17 games straight and finals? We just don't know yet, and that's going to mean that we're not going to be able to make actual structural decisions, organisational decisions in probably 6 to 8 weeks, I don't think, and potentially even longer, which is challenging. But probably the most pressing opportunity will be for us to start to build around what that restart looks like. Players, the football department coming back to training, hopefully sometime in May, and we'll talk to Travis shortly, and that'll be something I'll be interested to sort of get his views around what that looks like. We'll find out from Gillon, the AFL executive, on Monday or Tuesday. So I wouldn't say we're not pulling the trigger on certain things. We're certainly reducing our cost exposures. All clubs have had to do that. So many businesses had to do that at this point in time. You've seen, you know, the impact that the coronavirus has had in so many different industries, and we're no different. But what the final position will look like, we're just scenario planning at the moment. We certainly haven't executed.
And guys, to change tact a little bit, I'm pretty excited about Bucks coming on, and one of the most driven athletes I've ever seen play the game of Australian rules football and dedicated and focused was Nathan Buckley. But I know you guys are extremely excited this week about probably the globe's greatest athlete, according to you, Xavier, and most dedicated and focused athlete. The Jordan, The Last Dance was on. How did you guys find it? I know you were both salivating at the chance to watch it.
Well, I loved
it. It's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it transports you back to a period of time, and you just think about like what the 90s were like and the fashion, and you forget how big Jordan was. I mean, he was the Ali, you know, Muhammad Ali, and Michael Wilbon talked about it in the documentary, sort of like it's Babe Ruth, it's Muhammad Ali, and it's Jordan. You know, like they are the, in a league of their own, the most iconic figures. And just to see the behind-the-scenes stuff, you know, about how his work ethic, the advice that he got, and also, you know, like where he came from and the issues that they had to deal with. And it is really fascinating. And I think that you look at successful people in the sporting environment and it translates, and you think about, you know, Kobe and Jordan and Brady, and they all have this just insatiable, competitive, driven personality, and it just shines through, and they just will compete and compete against everything, and it's so fascinating to watch.
And what Michael Jordan was responsible from a globalisation, he was an athlete that just transcended his sport. That just, you know, you think back to the Barcelona Olympics in 92, and just the dream team back then, and that all underpinned by the cut through that Michael had in so many other markets. And you look at the growth of the NBA over the last 20 years, the true global growth. It's been phenomenal, been amazing to see. But I was definitely there at 5:23 p.m. on Monday night. Job and I were chatting. Herdy was... Jim, you would have liked... I'm sure you would have liked to have been watching it, but I reckon you had a slightly different agenda on that evening.
Yeah, well, just quickly, we have got Nathan on the line, so we want to jump to him because he's been very kind to give up his time. But the remote control, I certainly lost control of it about 5 years ago, and we had to watch Lego Masters. So while you guys are watching, we're watching Jordan, I was watching Lego Masters. But we're very, very fortunate to have one of the game's great players, ex-great players, and now one of the game's best coaches, and probably a little bit unlucky not to be a premiership coach right now, and a favourite son also of the Ainslie Football Club, Nathan Buckley. Welcome to the Essendon podcast.
How are you, gentlemen?
Yeah, no, good, you, thank you.
You only got rid of the white to jump into the Bombers' colours, mate. I had to get rid of the red.
Yeah, well,
what was Hurdy like to play with as in the under 13s? He said that you didn't really pass the ball much, but having played with him, I can't imagine that he would have done a lot of sharing either.
No, the right foot banana kicks in the middle of the ground were still being used to avoid using the wrong side. I reckon there was a lot of handballing going on from either. But we did okay. We went through and clearly Killer Reid was coach of the day.
Yes,
and he keeps telling us that he made us. So that's we'll have to run with that, I reckon.
Absolutely. And no, just to set the record straight, Bucks was the out and out star of the team. I was a little skinny bloke running around after Bucks. But you'd come from the Northern Territory, is that right, Nathan? Down to play with us. Your old man had moved around in the army, I think, and you came down to play at Ainslie. And yeah, to set the record straight, you were the star of the show for a couple of years at Ainslie over that period.
Well, mate, when I came down from Darwin and I was right at the bottom of the ladder, you know, bottom of the tree in Darwin, just scrapping for the just working for scraps, basically. And my year in, or my 18 months in Canberra were probably the best years of my childhood. The first 6 months to get sorted, but then year seven in Darramullen College was a great experience. Felt like a new school, new start. Obviously with the playing at Ainslie and actually representing ACT under 13s at one point was, the skies were blue and life was rosy, and then mum and dad decided to move back to Darwin again. So I had it all written. I had the rug ripped out from under me. I thought I had life sorted.
So, well, mate, thank you for coming on the show. And we haven't, you know, I'm sure the Ainslie Footy Club would be happy if we kept talking about them for the next 20 minutes, but there's probably more important things to talk about. Firstly, how are you handling isolation from a football point of view and a family point of view? I'm sure your kids and your wife, Tanya, are very happy that you're around the house a bit more than you probably are normally.
Yeah, well, probably not not a great assumption to make, Herdy, but it has been very different, and as it is for everyone. I mean, you don't expect your reality and your environment to change so significantly at any point, really. You do understand there's going to be things that'll be thrown at you to challenge you and that'll test your resolve and probably have you draw together as a collective, as a family unit or as friends or as a team as a club, as we've seen and known. But this is quite exceptional, and I think everyone's sort of just trying to get their head around it as they go and been working to try and find that happy medium and a new normal. It's been hard yards, to be honest, to try and stay connected to everyone remotely and keep yourself in good routine at the same time.
And Bucks, in terms of keeping, you know, connected to your players and your staff that you're working with, is it just via sort of, you know, obviously technology and things like that, but how the players and the staff members have you found, have they coped through this period of time?
I don't reckon you ever really know. I mean, we think we've done a pretty good job in the environment the last couple of years to check in on each other, to be as transparent as we possibly can. And if people feel supported authentically and genuinely, they'll generally open up a little bit more. You let you in a couple of layers deeper than they might otherwise. When you're not in each other's space, it's probably a little harder to pick up, you know, the little nuance, you know, the changes in behaviour that might be evident for people that are struggling a little bit. So trying to do it remotely has been difficult. You miss that the physical connection and to be honest, probably more intimate when you're in each other's space at the footy club. So it is a little more difficult, but we've communicated as consistently as we possibly can. Probably over communicated early, which probably everyone needed as much as anything, but we've got a pretty good routine to get the whole crew together on a Monday and a Friday, and we feel that that's sort of bookended the week for everyone, and mostly it seems that our people are finding a routine that works for them right now.
And Nathan, this is a very much an Essendon-centric show, obviously, and we appreciate you coming on. We've got, you know, 50 or 60,000 passionate Essendon supporters listening. What was your view when you, like, when we played Collingwood? It was always a massive game from an Essendon point of view. Always got ourselves up for it. Huge rival. You know, Carlton were our rival, Hawthorn our rival, North Melbourne. But the Anzac Day game was obviously the biggest of the year. As a player and a coach coming into the Essendon Football Club, what's the view at Collingwood of playing Essendon? I mean, we sort of had different views of Essendon playing different clubs, but from a Collingwood point of view, what's it like playing against Essendon?
Oh, look, for me, Herdy, it was, you know, I mean, you guys, I started my career in 93, and obviously, and then, you know, through the late 90s, early 2000s, the dominance that you guys had there. So, you know, my early stages, the first half of my career was, you know, Essendon were a dominant side and were really, you know, one, a side that you love to come up against. There's no doubt that the Anzac Day challenge that began in 95 sort of kick, you know, that to another level again. Because for us, you know, my experiences at Collingwood early days, it was what I assumed a final would be like. We played in the final in 94 over in Perth in my first year at Collingwood, and didn't play another final until 2002. So whilst you guys were winning flags, we were sort of just struggling to find our way and to get there. So playing on Anzac Day was the closest thing we knew that felt like it was a standalone game, had a different lead-in, as we know, and the pre-match is quite unique. So so playing Essendon and having Anzac Day there, it just made the rivalry probably stronger than any other that I experienced in my early years.
And just a quick one before I throw it to Joe. That pass to Rocker in 95, was there anything in your head to have a shot that thing? Or was it? I mean, I think I've seen that game three times or four times in the last 6 weeks played on, you know, different mediums. But when you stream through the middle of the ground, was there any thought of having a shot, or was just, there's Rocker, I've got to try and hit him?
No, I had a look. you can't see the broadcast, but there was I don't know whether one of the guys that was one of the three in the contest with Chav was the player, but I wasn't going to be able to carry the line, and it would have been marked in the goal square. But and I had a player bearing down to me, so I would have had to kick it up. But I suppose never let the truth get in the way of a good story. I really should have had a ping and won the game.
Well, it wouldn't be the rivalry it was unless you passed to Sav Rocker. So I think every supporter is pretty happy you did.
In many ways, it probably was a great way to start, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Hey, Bucks, one of the things that you know, I guess you get pigeonholed as a player, and as a player when you're in the AFL, I think you become very guarded about your real personality and who you really are, and you portray a certain way to the media, and you're very cautious about you know, how you're viewed. And then I personally, my viewpoint from how you've gone is now I see as a coach, as someone who just has so much more displays of empathy and perspective on life as a position in leadership as the coach at Collingwood. Is that something that you thought you've learnt as you've gone on, or through the experiences that you've had, or is it probably just something that you kept more guarded as you were a player and didn't really want to display?
It's a great question, mate. How long have you got? the company I'm in, I'm really conscious of that as well. I mean, yourself and Herdy, and the different challenges you've faced and the experiences that you've gone through, they can't help but shape you. And in some ways, it can make you cynical. It can make you doubt people's authenticity and their genuineness, and it actually can harden you in many ways so that you're not really as open as you would be normally, especially in a public forum where the scrutiny is high and where the judgment is through the roof, even without fact or perspective. So you guys have lived that. And I've lived that, and the glare can be pretty bright at different times, and sometimes you're looked upon more favourably than you should, and sometimes you're judged negatively on a level that is unfair and unwarranted. So I suppose the steps that I needed to take, Joe, to be. You know, who I am now is probably a bit more awareness of yourself first and foremost, and then a bit more confidence in yourself. And then I found you reach a point where you really don't care what other people think. And if you can get to that position, then you can truly be yourself. And that's pretty hard in the public forum. And I probably got to that point, you know, late in 2017, where I realised if I was going to go about it, I was going to go about it, you know, transparently and authentically and do it my way, I suppose, or be truer to myself. And I was very fortunate to get through that and be given another contract. And I haven't I can say that I've enjoyed my coaching and the involvement in football more in the last couple of years than I ever have, because I'm probably closer to my truer self. And the fact that, you know, the club has come along and we're winning a few more games definitely makes that easier. And you probably viewed it a little more favourably as a result. But I can honestly say, without the wins or the losses, take them out of it, my involvement at the football club is more enjoyable, because I feel there's a less of a difference between who I actually am and who I present as when I'm in a football environment, which I'm very thankful for.
It's a great answer, Bucks. Just to drill down on that a little bit further, I mean, you much celebrated player, but I always reckon it's great to hear the stories of the tough times of athletes, you know, because that's what shapes you. If you look through your career, obviously, you know, fantastic career, Brownlow medals, Copeland trophies. You talk about what was the most difficult time through your career, coaching or playing. I mean, imagine leaving Brisbane. It was a pretty tough decision, right? I mean, yeah, you'd go to a great club in Collingwood, but at the time you're still leaving a playing group. Was anything as tough in your playing career as perhaps going through what you did in 2017 and coming out the other side?
We all have our moments, mate, when we travel our journeys, and I'm not just talking about in football, I mean, in everything. We all have our moments that you think, I can't see myself getting the other side of this. But I think... yeah, 17 was tough, but you know, when I reflect on 12 and 13, when I first started senior coaching and the I suppose the landscape and the backdrop of trying to assert yourself or trying to impact the club as positively as you possibly could, and really you are. I mean, every senior coach is learning on the job. Doesn't matter how long you've been an assistant coach for, you are learning on the job, and I definitely was. And that were tough years, and not to have the imprimatur for change, or in some ways not to have the backing of the playing group for a lot of that time, and sort of that was a really tough place to be. So I would say they were as challenging years as any, mate, when I reflect on my coaching journey. When you're a player, it seems to me like you're a little bit even more myopic. You've sort of got your head in the trough, and you're getting to work, because physically you can always do something about it. There's something about coaching when you're going through a trough as a coach where you can't impact it physically, so it's a more difficult situation, because you're wholly responsible for it, but you can't actually do anything about it with your hands, which you've always relied upon as a player. So I find that they're probably, that you're right, that through those early couple of years as a senior coach, and were probably the toughest for me, because you're, as I said, all responsibility and no real capacity to impact with your effort as such.
Yeah, Bucks, do you have an opinion on, the draft age and how young we should be going, whether this is a good opportunity this year to raise the draft age and continue it on? I just, one of the things that I think is, with the perspective that you can get and give the guys an opportunity to get out of the football world and not just transition straight into it from high school. Do you have thoughts on whether or not it is a good idea to raise the draft age or to keep it as it is?
Oh, look, I think your old man played when he was 15, so you sort of think that, you know, you're going to lose maybe that opportunity, and that's very real. There's no doubt that's real, but I think that really has been the exception to the rule. I didn't play my first senior game until I was 20. I turned 21 in July of my first year, so I was, 20 and a half when I played my first senior game. And I was a late maturer, so I was overlooked through two or three drafts. I'm probably on the other side, although we've got, Marlon Pickett, who's come through even a lot later than that. But I think on the whole, my gut feel, and everyone has an opinion on this, and I think the industry is going through its processes now to work out what it looks like on the other side of COVID, and it probably does give us a chance to clean the slate and to go, okay, what do we want our competition to look like going forward? what can we afford first and foremost, but what do we want it to look like? The draft's one of those. I just get the sense that to invest another year in your development outside of a school setting, outside of your year 12 year, to have 19-year-olds or 18-19-year-olds play for another 12 months beyond the end of their schooling in the best competition that they can. So maybe they get a crack at second tier in VFL or SANFL or WAFL, and maybe they play a fair bit of under-19s football. Not only is it great for their development and having to, fend for themselves a little bit more or have time during the day or the week to do uni or to work, as well as try to manage their football, which is a professional existence, it probably gives the recruiters a more of a look another 12 months. I think there's probably the players are hopefully a little more settled. So I think there's a lot of benefits to leaving it another 12 months. But that would be an opinion. But I think there's plenty of things that need to go into that mix. And I'm pretty confident the AFL are doing a pretty good job at gathering all the necessary information to see which one works going forward.
It's quite remarkable to think that Nathan Buckley was overlooked for two or three drafts. Like the player you are, I think that's probably... people don't remember back to that time, and there's a lot of clubs I would think would be kicking themselves now over those decisions. But, Bucks, just on... I know you've got to go, you've got something to go to, but just quickly on the future, I think I heard you say that we should be very careful about removing coaches' jobs, and I understand the soft cap has to come down because of where we are, but... removing coaches and also list sizes. Obviously you've seen it all. You've been in the game for a long time, and your opinion is so respected. On those two issues, where do you sit?
Yeah. Well, I'm quite socialist when it comes to this, Herdy. If we could keep all our people, you'd just chop salaries off at whatever percentage you need to cut, and then get that done. So. That's probably the starting point, and then we work from what's practical beyond that. And that may not be possible to actually execute. But what it does do is you need to operate in a lean manner, but you still need to provide the right environment for your people, players mainly, but also for staff, to optimise their output, to optimise their contribution to your environment. So there's a certain level of investment that you need to be able to put into your people and therefore into your product to continue to grow or to innovate and to develop. And if you go beyond that or below that, you're going to hurt the product because you're going to hurt the environment because you're going to hurt the people. I think that we've just come out of a couple of years where nearly every person in our environment has contributed positively in some shape or form, and it can't stay like that. We know that, but we will be doing everything we can to keep as many of the people as we can, and to invest back into our programs as much as we possibly can, given the economic constraints that are coming. The playing list is a little bit different. So I think whatever percentage that say you have to drop 20% of your staff, for instance, and they're potentially on 30% less pay, so that gets you to where you need to get to. I think the playing list needs to drop pretty much pro rata, and the salary cap should need to drop pro rata as well. And I think that the ratios of people, staff or coaching to players is something that I would advocate stays relatively even, because I think the mix has been pretty good at the moment. If you had less staff with the same playing list, I think it's a detriment to both staff and players. So I'd want to keep that ratio pretty similar if that's what has to happen.
Nathan, very, very sound and sound advice and words of wisdom. And look, we really appreciate it from everyone at the Essendon Football Club and everyone listening. Thank you for coming on. I know it's unusual to be talking to the Essendon faithful, but it's pretty obvious to me why the Collingwood Football Club has been successful for as long as it has, with not only you as the captain, but an assistant coach and now as a senior coach. So congratulations on everything you've done. And from all of us here at Essendon, good luck, except for, you know, obviously whenever you play the Bombers.
No, I figured that, and I really appreciate the invite. It's a new way, isn't it? I think we're all in the same boat, and we're all just trying to find our best through circumstances like this. Yeah, when we pull the Guernseys on, we're going flat out as hard as we possibly can against one another. But I've admired you from afar and up close too, mate, and Job, and obviously the club and what it's been able to do and persist through some hardships in the last decade. But onwards and upwards, let's get through this and see what we can be a part of growing on the other side to see where AFL can go. So thanks very much for having me on, boys.
Thanks, Bucks. And just to finish, I've been down at Kevin Butler Reserve, which you know very well, and there's been four of your Collingwood boys down there regularly, so I won't dob them in, but they've been training very hard. So they're working very hard.
In two pairs, of course.
There might be some brothers down there anyway, put it that way.
Thanks,
Bucks.
So there you have it, Nathan Buckley joining us on Working Through It on the Essendon website. Now, we're going to take some calls in a minute on 1300 652 927. You can also send us a text as well, 0416 90 50 52. But just a reminder also, on Essendon's website, there's plenty of new content offerings, whether it's Don's Digital, through things like, I know there's the Adrian Dodoro podcast. There's also plenty of action where you can actually be interactive with the footy club. So you can do that at essendonfc.com.au. You can also now get the Working Through It podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and also Spotify. So all you have to do is subscribe to stay up to date with the latest episodes and leave a review. It has to be a 5-star review, of course, with your feedback. We'd love to be able to read that out on air. But your calls are next. Now, you can do this a number of different ways. It's a chance to speak to James Hurd, to Joe Watson, and also to Xavier Campbell about questions you have about the Essendon Football Club, but also, and probably more importantly, a chance to recognise some Essendon members out there that are doing it tough or doing some really good things in the community. And that's what someone is doing, and we're going to speak to them next on Working Through It.
Kevin Sheedy has done it again for the Bombers. There's the bounce, Somerville.
So that number, 1300 652 927, if you want to get involved today. And, well, Hurdy, particularly to you here, because you did sort of put a call out that you wanted to hear from Essendon fans that are either doing it tough or doing some really good things in the community that needed to be recognised. And we've been able to do that because we've tracked down an Essendon member, a passionate Essendon member and fan, Tamika Williams, who is a nurse, and she's going to share her story with us now. Tamika, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Hi, guys.
Hello, Tamika. How are you going? It's James here.
I'm good, thanks. Hi, James. How are you going?
Good. Can you take us through how you're living your life with your children and your family and what a day in the life of Tamika is at the moment? Because we've just had one of the stars of the bravest footballers playing in Nathan Buckley talking, but I'm sure right now that people like yourself are the stars, not the footballers.
Oh, thank you very much for that sentiment. To us, this is just another day on a bigger scale. You know, all nurses, we can adapt really well. Anything, you know, comes in at any time and we just adapt to it. There's been a lot going on. I work in the intensive care unit at my hospital and there's been a lot going on, especially behind the scenes. Here, there's been so many people creating protocols and sourcing protective equipment for us to keep us safe. So much going on every day. It's a massive team effort to manage this coronavirus.
Yes, and if we look through the life cycle, we're going to get your Essendon Football Club thoughts soon. We're going to talk to you about footy soon. But, everyone is fascinated by what is going on in the hospitals at the moment, the great job that not only the nurses and the doctors are doing, but particularly in the ICU. I mean, you look at places like New York and Italy and you just see carnage and chaos and you can't imagine how bad it would be. In the life cycle of this virus over the past 6 weeks, When did it be? When was it the worst for someone like yourself in the ICU in reality, but also in what you were forecasting coming down the line?
Yeah. So in all honesty, we haven't hit the worst yet. That's still to come. Luckily, we've been in a position to learn from the experiences from other countries. We're very responsive to what each day brings, and every day things change. For example, on one of my night shifts a few weeks ago, we pulled up the death toll, the live death toll that was happening in the US. And at the start of my shift, that was around 8,000 people had died from coronavirus. And at the end of my 10-hour shift, that number was up to 9,200. And that's sickening, like, to see that and hear that and to know that that's happening, you know, to people somewhere so far away. It's just horrible. For us here in Australia, the measures that Scott Morrison has popped in place and what all of our premiers have popped in place has done so much more than I think the general public can understand. These stage three restrictions are just helping minimise the risk. They've done such an amazing job, and everyone staying home is doing such an amazing job preventing us from hitting our, you know, the worst yet. So, you know, everyone staying home is doing a great job.
And Tamika, thank you for everything that you're doing and the extraordinary work that all the nurses and healthcare professionals are doing at this time for us to keep us all safe, especially through this moment, but through, you know, every day to day. I think that a lot of people are probably seeing the numbers that are going in Australia, and they're feeling quite positive about it, and they're thinking, okay, well, we're doing a good job at this stage. But how important, from someone who's on the front line and is actually experiencing it, is it that we follow through and are really diligent and continue on until the guidelines change, and not just think that we're past the worst of it, and we've got through it and we can move on? I mean, how much more diligent should we be in terms of the general population to help ease the load that you guys will have to carry?
We need to be so diligent still. Level three restrictions are still in place, and like I just said before, we haven't seen the worst of it. We're not anywhere near our peak yet. This is going to go on for months, for a long time. So while it is reassuring to see the numbers going down, you know, you can get the text through the WhatsApp and, you know, the nightly news. All news stories are always publishing the numbers and things, but staying home is still so important. It just reduces your risk of catching it. It reduces your risk of spreading it. It's keeping your kids, your parents, your grandparents safe. And everyone staying home has done such a fantastic job, and it's really eased the initial stage burden on us as healthcare workers for the time being. But like I said, we're not at our worst yet. We haven't seen the worst of it yet. That's definitely still to come.
And Tamika, what are the spirits like within the nursing community or in the medical community? Is everyone, obviously, you talk about seeing the deaths come in overnight, you know, going up considerably. Are people still in good spirits? I mean, I know you haven't seen the worst, but there must be some scary moments when you sit there together as a group and think what could happen or what is coming down the line.
Oh, absolutely. I think for everyone, you know, for me, for example, I've got a young son at home. And I don't want to pass this on to him. So every day that I go into work, I have to be so mindful and constantly think about what I'm wearing to work, how I take off my PPE, my protective equipment, so that it doesn't spread onto my work clothes, you know, having a shower before I go home, taking a different set of shoes in, wiping my keys, my pen. I don't even take my wallet or my handbag into work anymore. I just take my license and a Ziploc bag with a spare car key in it. Just to minimise risk of taking that home. We're all just very mindful about not spreading this to each other and our families. But we're a like, you know, all the nurses, all the doctors here and at every other hospital, we're all just a big family anyway. We're just here to support each other, and we've really banded together during this time.
And Tamika, footy and the Essendon Football Club, I know that you take a group of people every year to Anzac Day, and what the enjoyment that you get and what footy means to you, and how did you sort of begin following Essendon in the first place?
Yeah, so some of my older cousins, their family were mad Bombers supporters, so they kind of got me onto your footy club when I was very little. I can still remember before the 93 grand final, going around their neighbourhood with them and papering all the lampposts and things with red and black streamers and balloons, and then going in to watch the game. So that's where I started loving the Essendon Football Club, and I've followed them ever since. When I came to work in the ICU 7 or 8 years ago, there was already a big sort of cohort of Bombers and Collingwood supporters within the unit. And every year we organise to go to Anzac Day together. So we get a group together, we go have a barbecue in the park, and then we go watch the game, and more often than not head out afterwards as well. So it's such a nice way for us all to, you know, let go and just relax and enjoy the thing that, you know, a lot of people in this unit love, which is footy.
Tamika, it's Xavier Campbell here, and on behalf of everyone in our footy club and to everyone in your profession, everyone who's working in the hospitals, thank you for everything you're doing. We're very proud of you. You're obviously very proud of your team. We're very lucky to have people like you working in the system at the moment when we're dealing with such unprecedented position. We would love to take care of you and all your fellow nurses at Anzac Day next year in 2021. So I've got 10 passes for you guys for next year. We'll create something special around that. I'm sure we can build something around that event as well to make it an even more special day than what it is, for you and the rest of the group to say thank you for everything you've done on behalf of the footy club.
Oh, that would be so great. Thanks, Xavier. We really appreciate that. Thank you for acknowledging, you know, what we're all up against, and for acknowledging nursing as a profession as well.
Thank you, Tamika, and thank you for all your extraordinary work, and stay safe. I'm sure it must be very daunting sometimes going to work with everything that's going on.
Yeah, it can be, but you know, we're all in this together, so everyone plays their part. Thank you all for staying home.
Thanks, Tamika.
Thanks, Tamika.
Terrific. Tamika joining us there, Essendon fan, and isn't she doing terrific things in the community? And Herdy, before we go to a break and get to our next guest, that's kind of what it's all about, working through as we are at the moment together.
Yeah, it is. And look, it's what you talk about, the self-sacrifice of an ICU nurse and Tamika, and I suppose it's hard to rationalise about her children too. I mean, how many people would sacrifice going into the hospital, potentially catching the virus, then going back to their family and their own child? I mean, that's an extraordinary sacrifice. And, you know, I think that we all sit at home, we get a bit frustrated, the kids get frustrated, we can't see our friends, we want to go to work, want to get out. But when you listen to Tamika talk about how important it is and the fact that we haven't seen the worst, I think it brings it home to reality. And the more, and that's a lot what this show hopefully is about. Yeah, we want to talk some football, we want to have some fun, but we do want to bring our Essendon football community together, and also, you know, have people like Tamika tell us some stories. I think we may be having someone from the government come on next week, talk about some issues there, and really just give our Essendon community an entertaining show, but also educate them and help them as well.
All right, what we'll do, we'll take a break. We'll hopefully get to some more calls a little bit later on in the program. But Travis Old, Xavier, is one of the busiest men in Australia, and we've been able to jag him for a bit of a chat. So we'll do that next on Working Through It.
Ryder sandwiched between two pies. Back of the pack is Winderlick. Quick handball to Hocking. Back to Lovett Murray. He goes short. It's a mark to Zaharakis. Zaharakis has kicked a goal. The Bombers are in front of the G.
Now, before Travis Old joins us, Job, where were you at that point when David Zaharakis kicked the goal that changed his life?
I was actually right next to him, and I think he probably took the ball. I think it was meant for me, and he just snuck in there. And then I was the one that lifted him up and celebrated. And unfortunately, and Herdy will echo this sentiment, it was the worst thing that could have possibly happened to Zaka, because his head has never recovered or returned to a decent size since that happened.
Now, yes, I agree with you, Joe, but at least he didn't give it to you, because you would have handled it.
That's true.
Now, Xavier, I'm going to leave our next guest to you to introduce, because, as I mentioned, he's one of the busiest men in the world at the moment, let alone Australia, a former employee of the Essendon Football Club, and away you go.
Yeah, no, it's good to have Trav. I mean, he's got a lot going on, and clearly what the AFL are dealing with at the moment, I know what it's like at club level, but when you think about it from a macro perspective and sort of looking at competition holistically, what Travis, Andrew, Dylan, Gil, all those guys in there, they're dealing with an unprecedented situation. They're dealing with something very complex. Trav's obviously a CFO in there. He's head of broadcasting and fixture as well, so he's got a massive amount on his plate. So it's, I guess by getting Trav on today, gives us the opportunity to ask a lot of questions about this unique environment and how we're sort of navigating through it. So, and he was at the Bombers for a number of years as well, before he went up to Gold Coast as CEO and then has been the AFL for the last few years now. So, Trav, thanks for coming on, mate.
Fantastic, guys. Thanks for having me.
Now, mate, firstly, we might just talk. I was just going to say, just your time before we jump into it, into the tough questions that no doubt Herdy and Job are going to ask you about what the current landscape looks like and how we're going to get back to playing. Like, your time in Essendon, how do you reflect on that?
I probably learned as much of Essendon as I've learned anywhere. I was there for just over 10 years. And the funny thing was, I never planned to end up in football. I love football. I grew up in the country and footy in winter and cricket in summer. But I started my career at an accounting firm in the city. One of the clients was Essendon, and so I got to know the people there and got to know the new CEO at the time, Peter Jackson. And cut a long story short, he convinced me to come across and work for the club. And I think that was sort of mid to sort of late-ish 90s. And the club looked very different when I started to when I finished, and learned an enormous amount under Peter. Very good operator. You knew where you stood with Peter all the time, and that allowed, you know, that feedback loop allowed you to get better. I really, really enjoyed it. And I was very, very lucky that the very successful group at the time, and got to watch some of the better players in our history of our game up close every week.
Trav, thanks for coming on the show, because as Whitey pointed out, you are probably one of the busiest men in Australia at the moment. When you wake up in the morning at the moment, what are the first four or five priorities for you? I mean, it must be changed, but you know, you're in charge of fixture, broadcasting, finances. How do you balance all that? And what, in your opinion, is the number one thing that you need to get done outside of the government saying we can go back and train once they do that going forward?
Yeah, good question, James. I think if you sort of go back, I'm not sure how long it is now, probably sort of 4 to 6 weeks ago, it all sort of blends into one. But initially the focus was around, clearly we're going to have trouble getting a season away. We're certainly not going to get a traditional season away. There's every chance we won't get a season away with crowds. And so, like most businesses around the country and around the world, we have to get costs out of our business and out of our industry. And Dave, we'd better talk about this, but that is largely labour and people. And so we had the really difficult couple of weeks of reducing our businesses to skeleton staff. And at AFL, that was about 80% of our workforce got stood down. And so my CFO hat sort of dominated early, which was, how do we demonstrate that we can remain solvent through this period for our board and for each of the club's boards? And so we got as much cost out of the business as we could, as quickly as we could. That was quite chaotic. If you sort of fast forward now, my main focus is, how do we return to play? How do we restart this season? In what format can we restart this season? That relates as much to getting the game going as it does finance and every part of our business.
And Zave, in terms of the fixture, and I know you would normally spend, you know, weeks and months trying to plan a proper fixture. How, from a logistics sense, with so many moving parts, what's the reality, will a fixture look like? Will it be, you know, 17 games plus finals? Will there be, you know, teams that are coming from the West Coast and staying in the East Coast? What will travel look like? Do you have a sense of where that's going to end up landing?
Yeah, I think we've got, we're certainly developing a plan. How that plays out, I'm not exactly sure at the moment. We, as I said earlier, we made the decision to go from a 23-round season to a 17-round season. Everyone plays each other once, and then a standard finals series. And then we went a step further to say that we're not even going to approach it as a 17-round series, but 153 games. We've got to find a way to get 153 games away. We're now down to 144 after round one. And that means that we won't take a traditional round-to-round, weekend-to-weekend approach. It may mean that we play games 5, 6, 7 days a week, a lot of night games, a lot of midweek games. one round in a way might blend into another. Shorter breaks, because we reduced the length of games, could allow us to play games off four-day breaks, as long as we get the parameters right for the players. So we're taking a very different approach. And I suppose one thing that helps us is that if you look at a normalised fixture, I think there's a lot of factors you've got to take into account. But one of the dominant ones is about maximising our supporters' access to the game. And so getting the right games at the right times of year, so school holidays, the right slots in terms of the days of the week, getting the games at the right time of day and night is really, really important in a normalised fixture. We're taking the assumption now that it's very unlikely we'll play games in front of crowds, certainly for the majority of the season, if not the entire season. And so that provides some more flexibility to produce a 17-game season, and you're not worrying about your second matchups. So in some ways, yes, it's completely different, and we're a bit pressed for time, but in some ways you've got more flexibility, not less, simply because of those factors.
And so there's another article on that. Another article in the Herald Sun today about hubs. Is that it felt like 6 weeks ago when it was talked about, the players were sort of against it. You know, Patrick Dangerfield came out and said a few things. It feels like the industry's getting more and more used to this hub environment. Would you say a percentage chance there's a higher percentage of going ahead as hubs than as, you know, teams flying all over the place than not?
Yeah, I think, Dave, it feels like the only way we're going to get our season started. It may not be the way we complete our season, but it certainly feels like the way that we need to get it started. I think early on there was a lack of information because we just simply didn't have it, and players were getting asked questions about what a hub looks like and what they'd think about a hub. And you've been there before, and if you don't have all the information, it's difficult to understand how we're going to deal with some of the concerns they've had. We've since had a few conversations with the players. We'll have a lot more of them. And you can see that they're starting to, I think, number one, they're starting to understand a bit better, and secondly, they're starting to get a bit restless. And so I think they're keen to play. And a hub really is just is a term for how do we put our players in an environment where we can firstly sort of prioritise their health and safety, but also not be a burden on the community. We're very aware of our place in society. We're very aware that there's a bigger picture here. And whatever we do, we want to complement what's happening, not be a distraction, and certainly not be a burden on the health system. And so a hub format allows us to do that.
Mm-hmm. So you and I were having a discussion the other week, Trav, about the hubs, and was foreign to me at that point in time. But you were talking about, so every decision we seem to be making at club level, league level at the moment, it just feels hard. Like everywhere you go, you think you might have found a way out, but then there's other aspects that sort of rear their head and you hadn't really thought of. Like the concept of hubs, like how difficult has it been to work through exactly how something like that could be executed?
Yeah, I think it's funny, Dave, if you look back on the last month, we've made decisions, more decisions the last month than probably made in the last 4 years, just in necessity. We've reduced the length of the game, we've changed the structure of the fixture, we've done deals with our players, we've changed the way in which clubs manage their football programs, the whole range of things that the industry has done together in a really short period of time. It is difficult. There's no great precedent for any of this stuff. And so we're sort of working as best we can with the best advice we can get, largely from the experts in the health field. And there's a lot of sports around the world who are looking to recommence their season. So we're staying close to them and understanding what they're trying to do. The medical protocols are really important. I think your question was around just the format of the hubs. Is that right?
Mm.
Yeah, so we've got a few options in front of us. They range from one hub with 18 teams sort of together, playing, you know, obviously maybe two, three stadiums for a season. And then there's an opportunity to have maybe up to three hubs with, say, six teams in each hub located in different states, playing at a traditional home and away venue. So there's a few options in front of us. We don't control all the variables here. We don't pretend to control all the variables. So we're in the hands of government largely and the community generally as to when they think it's right for us to start again. All we can be is as best prepared as we can and have the industry fully aligned, including clubs and players and broadcasters and venues, all on the same page. So if we get the opportunity to restart, then we're ready to go.
Trav, just been in the newspaper, you've got NRL lost their CEO, Kevin Roberts from Cricket Australia seems to be under the pressure. I think Raylene Castle is a name from the ARU. The AFL seems to be the only major sport in Australia to have kept itself, you know, sort of everyone within the tent and everyone supporting each other. You know, broadcasters seem to be on board, clubs are on board, players are on board, and the AFL's together. Has that been difficult? And how have you managed to do that where it looks like the other three major codes have sort of, you know, there's a fair bit of infighting between different bodies?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to really understand an organisation until you're inside it, but I can certainly comment from our perspective, and Dave will have his own view on this, but a long time before this situation arose, we made a decision that we need to operate as an industry, that we've got one pie, and if we grow the pie together, then each of our slices get bigger. And so we've had this collaborative approach, certainly since I've been at the AFL, which is just over 5 years, where we need to make sure that the stronger we are together, the more we prosper. And so this has been tested during these times, but the work was done and the relationships were strengthened long before this. And so we're very fortunate from the commission through our club presidents and club CEOs that we've taken that approach. It doesn't mean we don't have disagreements. We have a lot of them. Things are rigorously debated. But clubs largely have the ability to put aside the interests of their individual club in these sort of circumstances and understand that if we can all go into this together and treat it as an industry challenge, then we'll come out much stronger. And it's been incredibly pleasing, as much as we've had you know, long nights and working through different scenarios. We certainly feel like we're on the same page.
And Trev, just finally from me, do you have an idea on when you think that the games will be back up and going from where we are now?
No, we don't. Nothing concrete, Job. All I'd say is it just feels like that the opportunity is getting closer. You certainly see what's happening. We've done an incredible job as a country of staying disciplined, and that discipline needs to remain. And for as long as we do that, then I feel like the opportunity to restart is becoming more realistic. Certainly, listen to each of the state governments and certainly the federal government. Everyone understands that we've still got a role to play, but there may be a time when we can release some of those restrictions, albeit, I'm guessing, without crowds initially and in certain formats. So that's a long way of saying no, I don't. We've already agreed with the players that they're prepared to go beyond the end of September, beyond the end of October, if necessary, to get a season away. And so we've got some level of flexibility. And as we talked about earlier, given we shortened the game, we've got the ability to play, for example, 5 games in 4 weeks on a sort of rolling basis, if that's what it needs to happen.
Trav, thanks for coming on, mate. We appreciate it. It's obviously, as the boys sort of touched on, it's been a busy time. I think the industry has come together in a big, big way. I think the fans have come together in a big, big way in dealing with what has been just a complex and really challenging landscape for everyone. We've still got a fair bit of work in front of all of us. But, you know, as we don't always see eye to eye, the AFL and the clubs, and we challenge each other, obviously. But you guys have had to deal with an enormous amount and some really complex decisions, mate. So on behalf of our club, thank you for everything you guys have done. And let's look forward to getting a season away at the right and appropriate time. But thanks for coming on the podcast.
No, thanks, David. Can I say, a big part of this, you talked about it, is it's going to take an effort from a lot of people, but the membership of clubs and the members of your club, the support that they're showing is so important during times like this, and it's certainly been recognised. I know it is at the club, but it certainly is at AFL level as well.
Cheers. Thanks mate.
Thanks, Trev.
Thanks, guys.
Terrific. Travis Eld there from the AFL, and I reckon a lot of Essendon fans and just footy fans would have got a lot out of that particular interview, giving us a bit of an indication as to what it might look like over the next 6 months or so in AFL footy. There's a lot to get through still on this show, working through it. And we're going to try and squeeze in a few more calls and some text messages as well, because we didn't get much of a chance to do that earlier. 1-300-652-927 if you want to have a chat to the guys. 0416 90 50 52 is the text message service. I've got a few of those that I want to get to shortly as well. You are listening to Working Through It on snnfc.com.au. Now, we played it before, but I want to play it again, and that's the David Zaharakis goal in that Anzac Day match in the rain, and get a little bit more as to the build-up to that from Job and maybe even the thoughts of James and Xavier as well as to how that moment changed, I reckon, the life almost of David Zaharakis. So if we can remember back, Essendon fans, it was raining. It didn't look like Essendon were any chance at all. Maybe a little bit of help from the umpires helped. Maybe just a little bit to get Essendon over the line. But here it is again, David Zaharakis on Anzac Day.
Ryder sandwich between two pies. Back of the pack is Windelich. Quick handball to Hocking. Back to Lovett Murray. He goes short. It's a mark to Zaharakis. Zaharakis has kicked a goal. The Bombers are in front of the G.
It was an Anzac Day match, a moment to remember. It was a Coles mighty moment from a Bombers perspective. And Job, again, just expand a little bit more as to the build-up to that. Did you think you were a chance of winning with about 5 or so minutes to go? And then not only the goal, but what happened after the goal?
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, like we were behind the entire day and it really did feel like it was just, it was going to be a loss, you know, a 10, 15 point loss. But then probably the thing that gets overlooked the most is Ricky Dyson, with about 3 minutes to go, has kicked a goal from the boundary line, 50 metres out in the pouring rain. And not once is it talked about, but Ricky actually put us within within a one kick. And all you get shown is Zaka's goal, but poor old Ricky just gets overlooked. And then also Leroy sort of fell over and missed the unmissable goal that would have put us in front before it actually even transpired. So it was a funny way of it turning out the way it did. But, you know, another great Anzac Day. And there's just been so many close Anzac Day games of recent year. And it is just, it is a really special day and something that I know all the players are very, very proud to be a part of and thankful that the club is and Collingwood do it and that we get to play in it.
Herdy, I've got a question for you. The difference between coaching on Anzac Day and playing on Anzac Day, you can kind of control things as a player, but what about as a coach?
Both are very privileged, but as a coach, generally, it's the most helpless position on the ground. You just feel like you're absolutely helpless, particularly Anzac Day, where there's so much emotion and you're really trying to... I mean, I'm not sure, Joe, how long the players go out before the first bounce, but I think it's, you know, it's 20 minutes from the time you leave your players to the time you actually, you know, that they get to have a kick. And you just wonder about the mental state in that first 15, 20 minutes with the crowd and everyone, the brain's rushing. So definitely playing is much more enjoyable, full stop. But, you know, to be a coach on that day is a very privileged position to be in as well.
Now, Matt from Shepparton has texted us in on 0416 90 50 52. He says he's a 28-year fanatical member, lifetime supporter. He wants to know, James, if you had to narrow down to one Anzac memory, what would it be?
There's probably two. The 95 game was extraordinary. You know, we talked about the Bucks just before, but the fact that we're all pretty young and Collingwood were young and there was, you know, Nathan Buckley, Sav Rocker in probably their 30th game on our size, McCurry, Alessio, you know, Wanganeen, just young guys playing this game. And we didn't realise when we went into the ground what was going to happen. The fact that it was going to be a lockout, basically. And when we ran out, the noise, but by the time the game had finished, it went from this massive noise to the end of the game, dead silence again, because not the players or the supporters knew what to do. But probably my greatest memory of Anzac Day was a day I didn't play. It was, you know, 1999, when I had a broken foot and I was at the hospital where Tanya was delivering young Stephanie about 4:30 in the morning, and then turned up to the ground to watch the game. That's probably my greatest Anzac Day memory.
All right, Joe, but just quickly, Julianne from Airlie Beach in Queensland wants to know your favourite memory from Anzac Day.
I think that for me was probably, I didn't play in too many wins, but the one that stands out was the 2013 game, because it was the only time that we'd actually really dominated an Anzac Day game, and we could actually enjoy, like, the last quarter we sort of were in front and were going to win. And the other times I played in winning games had been, you know, the last
2 minutes or the last minute. So it wasn't actually, it was more excitement where that 13 game we actually were able to enjoy winning. And it was, there is nothing like that I've experienced in my time as a player as the noise that is created on an Anzac Day. And I wasn't fortunate enough to play in a grand final. But for me, the sound that both teams, both supporters make on that day when you're winning or when the other side is winning, it is it's an incredible feeling to be standing out there in the middle of that with those fans and what they are able to generate and the love and the support that you can hear.
All right, now, Xavier, we had a poll put up on the Essendon website last week because we asked the question to Sheeds, what was a stronger team, the 2000 Premiership-winning team or the 1985 Premiership-winning team? Do you know? Have you got the actual results at the moment on where we're looking when it comes to the Essendon fans?
Yeah, I think the fans, we've got about 40% support for 85 and the rest are right behind the 2000 Premiership team.
Right.
It's quite compelling at the moment. What do you think, Job?
Well, I think that perhaps that we've got a younger generation who only remember the 2000 and they can't remember the 85. I don't know. Herdy's probably biased, but...
Sorry, is that Job or Tim? Is that Job or Tim speaking there?
I'll go with the senior coach and what he thinks. I think he's probably the right person to make the call.
I'll tell you what, I reckon if you asked any Essendon supporter who's went to the 84, 85, 93 or 2000 Premiership, which was the best one, I reckon every one of them would say the 84 Premiership. 19-year wait. I think you talk to people in the stands. I remember sitting next to my old man at that game, and it's still the greatest memory I have of any football game, whether played in or watched. And he turned around, hugged the bloke behind him and kissed him. He didn't know who the bloke was, but it was just like this, you know, outpouring of emotion in that last quarter that I think any Essendon fan who was at that game, I think, would say that was probably, that was the greatest atmosphere I've ever been at a football game for.
All right, Xavier, before we sort of kick things along, you did want to talk about something from Sean Wellman, because I think this is pretty important to play and also get James's views on. Can you explain a little bit more to our listeners?
Yeah, obviously, you know, we've been recording a lot of different audio and visual from past players about great moments in our history, but it's sort of it does focus on the 2000 Grand Final, and I think we'll cut to the audio, Whitey, and then we'll be able to chat about it more specifically after.
Hi, this is Sean Wellman, and this is my 2000 Grand Final memory on the A-Mark couch. Well, one of my great memories of the 2000 Grand Final was before the centre bounce, Herdy used to always get the team together and have a bit of a pre-match sort of speech, last few thoughts, things to focus on. And I remember to this day that he actually spoke to the group, looked at everyone in the eye and said, at the end of the game, there's no Norm Smith medalist, there's only Premiership players. Just the importance of playing as a team, doing your job, not being an individual, not worrying about individual accolades, and that's the thing I remember before we went out to our positions. Ironically, Herdy won the Norm Smith medal, so he might have been saying, look, boys, I'll take care of the Norm Smith, you just do your job and we'll all be Premiership players. But that was one of my great memories of the 2000 Grand Final.
did you say none of you will be Norm Smith medalists? Only I.
I just thought I just said kick it to me. But you know, that if he's interpreted that way, then that's fine. But the theme of that whole year was about unselfishness. If you look at that team, and you know, it's interesting to compare 84, 85 to that 2000 team. We left at least one premiership on the table there, and you know, if you talk about playing career, that's the most disappointing part of my career is we left one there, but. That whole year was about sacrifice and doing it for each other, and you know, I'm glad the other 21 players left it to me to take the medal. It was very, very kind of them.
Well, the latest edition of the AMAC Cash will be released tomorrow on the Essendon website, so stay tuned for that. And I think in a couple of weeks' time, Dustin Fletcher might be on the AMAC couch, so stay tuned for that. Now, we have to get to, this is very important, this is Your Call from Home, also presented by AMAC, and the winner this week for the Joe Danaher mark, well, it's Jordan Anthony, because he did this.
comes into the 50, and what have they got? Oh, Joey Delahert takes a screamer, and landed like a cat. Oh my God, he's a magnificent specimen. We love this man. Oh, go back and kick the goal, Joey. We love you, son.
So he is the winner, Jordan Anthony. Job, out of 10, please.
No, very good. And I think that if you watch the tape, it was on Jackie Carlisle's back, which Joey enjoyed, and so did the other teammates as well. And it just reminded him all about it.
Well, the one on the Essendon website at the moment is actually Joe Watson from the 2013 Anzac Day game. So get involved on the website, and we might be listening to your commentary next week. Okay, it's time for the final comments before we wrap things up on this latest edition of Working Through It. And, well, I might start here with you, Xavier. You can sort of work your way through with Hurdy and Job.
Yeah, no, thanks, thanks, Whitey. Obviously, one thing I just will say before I throw up to the guys for their reflections, I mean, it's... obviously, Anzac Day this week, we've got the Stand 2 campaign, which many of our members and supporters will have seen on the website. So at 1 p.m. this Saturday on Anzac Day, we'll stream the bugle moment, the last post, will be streamed online on the Essendon website and the AFL website, the Collingwood website. So we encourage all our fans to enjoy that moment, that honour and commemorate those that have paid the ultimate sacrifice for our country, made the ultimate sacrifice for our country, and we thank them. And what we the independence we have today as a country is because of those sacrifices. So we encourage all our fans to wear their club colours, stand outside, go online to then vote your favourite Anzac Day game, and then that will be streamed live in the afternoon following the last post. So we encourage all our fans to do that. Job and I just wanted to sit here and talk about the last dance, really, the Chicago Bulls documentary for another hour, but James was pretty keen to talk about Lego Masters for a little bit longer. But what would you two like to say in closing out the week, or any other topics? We've sort of given ourselves a little bit of time at the back end of the program to chat about any other issues. But what's come to your mind, Hurdy or Joe?
No, I think, well, Xavier, the NFL draft is on Thursday night, which is going to be some great viewing for people who are just needing to get through Friday mid-morning, which I'm very excited about. But one of the best things that I ever did in my time at Essendon was I went on a trip with Tommy Bell-Chambers and Cale Hooker, and it wasn't to Vegas. This one was to Gallipoli. And we went, one of the most moving places I've ever been was at the Neck. And we had a historian who was describing to us what took place there. And I just remember thinking to myself, you know, like these guys were getting up knowing that they're about to die, not really knowing why they were what they were dying for or what the reason was for it, other than that they were just sacrificing for the freedom of the people that they cared about back home. And, you know, it is such a special day in Australia, and I'm so thankful for what people have done in the past and now what people are doing in terms of their sacrifices in a different way in the present day. So, you know, it is such a humbling time for us all, and we can never forget, you know, what people have done in the past to sacrifice for our freedom.
Yeah, I probably just want to echo Job's words and say thank you to all the ex-servicemen and women and current servicemen and women for everything you've done for us in our society. And a special thank you to Bucks and to Trav, but also Tamika for coming on the show. I think you know, we've had three fantastic guests, and Tamika's certainly the hero of the show today. So thank you. And I just want to sign off with a special happy 21st birthday to young Stephanie Hurd, who gets to spend her 21st at home with her parents.
She's thrilled, I'm sure.
I feel for her. Thanks, guys. I mean, we're an hour and 20 minutes in, Whitey, so we've got to have to wrap it up. But we didn't get a chance to. We could have spoken to Bucks for a hell of a lot longer, same as Trav and Tamika. I mean, we were great guests. We didn't get to talk about the famous, now famous TikTok video from Bucks and the following one from Goody. I sent it to the boys earlier, to James and Job earlier, that was phenomenal. Did you see Goody's one?
I'm not sure what's so phenomenal about it. I saw him dance.
A TikTok video, yeah.
Unbelievable. He's clearly bored. He's bored in isolation, Goody.
Is Goody a handle bored? It's been a big week.
We both know what he'd be like. He'd be crawling up the wall. I'd say my sort of closing piece would be, it's going to be a big couple of weeks for football, AFL football, as the AFL starts, as Trav sort of alluded to, and as Gil and others from the AFL come out early next week to start to talk about what the landscape's going to look like. Obviously, leaning heavily on the health experts and the doctors and government, but I think for the benefit of our fans, we'll start to sort of see what a potential restart looks like. And particularly for our players as well. You know, our players, it's challenging when you're sort of in a state of flux like they are. And it's going to be really interesting next couple of weeks as you start to look through that. And thank you to all the fans. I think we had just under 30,000 stream the show last week. We had just under 50,000 engage more broadly across the videos and the podcast streams and everything else like that. So the members have really got behind the podcast, which is great. Please feel free to keep texting through any topics or tweet the club and what topics you'd like to talk about, and we'll try and cover all of those in the coming weeks as we sort of continue to build the show out.
Yep, and I'm sure there's going to be more people like Tamika that Essendon fans know that we could get in touch with and have a chat and share their stories as Tamika did, because I think that's a really important part of this, and it was great to speak to her as James and Job and Xavier said tonight. Guys, thanks very much, and I know all Essendon fans are really enjoying your insights, and I'm sure they're all looking forward to next week.
Thank you.
Thanks guys.
Xavier Campbell, James Hurd and Joe Watson. That's the end of the program. Enjoy the rest of your evening. And, we'll do it all again next week. We'll speak to you then.